Today I'm talking with Teresa Eggleston. Teresa runs a healing center out in Spokane, Washington called Embodied Psyche, and very soon she'll be opening up a place called Alchemy Hilliard. So today we're going to talk about lifespan integration therapy, body-based trauma therapy, and AV entrainment. So personally, I've had an experience with audiovisual entrainment, and it was an amazing experience. I've just got a lot out of it. And so I'm really excited to talk with Teresa about these different modalities, how she mixes them together, and how she utilizes all of the information that she has to help the clients that are in front of her. I'm really excited about this conversation. Hope you enjoy it. We'll see you on the other side. All right, welcome back to our show. Today I'm talking with Teresa Eggleston. So Teresa was introduced to me by a friend that you've heard me talk about multiple times. I've had her on the show multiple times, Hannah Talbot, based out of Spokane, Washington. She runs an Anamkara Center out there. And so Teresa is Teresa has her master's in marriage and family therapy and works out of a space right now, actually two spaces in Spokane called Embodied Psyche. And so I'm going to talk with Teresa today about, you know, kind of her path to lead her to where she is now and then working with some of the modalities that she works with. This is the thing I love about this podcast is I get to talk to people that do things that I don't do because I can't do all the things and I don't want to do all the things. You know, that's why we have people that are just like passionate about the things that they're passionate about. They're drawn to whatever they're drawn to for whatever reason, just like I'm drawn to sound and plant medicines. You know, everybody has their thing that they're kind of drawn to and that works with their modalities. And so the three main topics I want to talk about today with Teresa are lifespan integration therapy, body-based trauma therapy, and AV entrainment. And I've had a little experience with the AV entrainment, but the other two modalities, I mean, as I read about them, I've found aspects of that work that's helped me, but never under that guise, under that actual name. So I'm super excited to talk with you about what you do, how you got to where you're doing, and just what the future holds for you. So first off, just thank you so much, Teresa, for joining me. I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you so much, Adam, for having me here. I'm super excited to talk with you.
Yeah. So I love Hannah Talbot so much, and she has just been a dear friend of mine. She's been my Reiki master through all three levels of Reiki. Just a dear friend, and I value her so much as a human being. And when she comes to me and says, "I got a human for you to talk to," there's no questions asked. Hannah knows what's up. So when she was like, "Teresa, you got to talk to Teresa. She's got a great story. She does cool shit." Loving this, right? So maybe we start off by talking just about maybe how you got to where you're at, you know, how you got to, some of the life experiences that you've gone through to help get you to an understanding of where you can hold space to help people.
Totally. Yeah, actually, gosh, probably takes me back a few years. You know, it was my own experience with therapy and kind of healing. Really, I was in a really dark place and experiencing, you know, a very unhealthy relationship that was riddled with like abuse. Mm. And so I finally reached out for a therapist for myself, kind of almost like hopelessly. I had experienced therapy before and it wasn't really for me. It didn't feel like it fit right, but I just was really desperate for something. So I reached out and connected with a very wonderful therapist in town. And we just started working together. We did a lot of EMDR, which helped release a lot of trauma. And it came to a point where I was like, gosh, I don't know what I want to do next. I wish I could help people like you do. And she was like, well, why don't you? And I'm like, oh, I am far too messed up. I could never. And she kind of leaned in and she was like, hey, secret, like therapists who truly get it, it's because they've been through it.
Right.
And it just really, it changed my perspective. She really rooted me on. And so I went back to school after 16 years and completed my bachelor's in health psychology, which really sparked the like mind body stress connection. And then I went on to get my master's in marriage and family therapy. But also Hannah, I love that you mentioned her because she's such an integral part of this, meeting Hannah and getting connected with her and learning meditation and also Reiki. I studied, you know, through my Reiki mastership with Hannah as well. Those things help shape this into like, wow, it's not all in your head. Trauma is stored in the body. And I found healing through these modalities. And so I just wanted to be able to share the things with everybody. So I'm like, okay, what papers, what certifications do I need so that I can start sharing this with my community?
It's so interesting. The experience that we have, that we feel like I can't be the person that holds space. I've done too many things. I've got too many cobwebs, too many things happening to me that I can't be that person. And I share that same sentiment, and even today, I still have that imposter syndrome that pops up every once in a while when I'm like doing a Reiki session. That little voice pops up and is like, "Hey, Adam, you realize you're pantomiming over this human and you don't have shoes on, right? Like, put your hands in your pocket and go do something productive with your life." And it's like, "Shut up, I got this, right?" But this idea was introduced to me through my healing journey, through another former guest named Holly West, and she talked to me about the shamanic death. And how in the shamanic tradition, the shaman experiences all forms of trauma, all forms of happiness, all forms of everything that you possibly can, so that you can fully understand and hold space for the people that you need to help. And that's that idea of the shamanic death, where we understand, I say we, but the understanding that, taking on the trauma, right? And so you know how to process that trauma, so you can hold better space for people in that. And so the reason I say that is because, like, I through my journey, and by no means am I a shaman. I'm not saying that at all. I've followed some paths. I've had some teachings from shamans, but I'm not a shaman. But I do recognize with that shamanic death, because there's times where I'm sitting in my own self, and I know that what I'm processing isn't mine. It's not mine. It's not rooted in any trauma that I have. It's not rooted in any fear that I have, but it's there, it's present, and it's very, very strong. And it's one of those questions I got to ask, is this energy mine? And the answer that I get is no, but you need to learn how to process it, right? And then without doubt, without fail, like, it's just so kismet. The next client that I'll see, no previous understanding of who this person was. They reached out to me in some random way. It's like, "Oh, hey, I'm dealing with this trauma. Can you help?" It's like, "Oh, that's why I'm dealing with this right now." We got to prepare ourselves to hold that space, and to almost change that verbiage in our head that we're not enough. That we can, we're strong, we can do this. And it's not like I'm the person that's going to hold your hand through this, but I'm going to experience this so I can show you some tools to help you out.
Yep, exactly.
So with was lifespan therapy one of those, integration therapy, one of those first modalities that kind of came from your master's degree and started to work with? Or, okay, so how did that kind of get into you?
So lifespan is kind of a newer therapy. It was developed in, I think, 2003 by Peggy Pace over on the west coast of Washington. And it was something that our director just brought up. He was really excited about it, and he just mentioned it to our cohort, like, "Hey, there's this extra training. If you guys want to spend a couple $100, and do this thing, you can learn about it. It's not a requirement, but it's just if you want to." And so me, I'm like, "Ooh, something new.
Hell yeah.
What's this about?" And I read about the creator and her beliefs, and she also works with energy healers and has just a more holistic perspective of healing. So right away I was like, yes, I need to know what this is about. And part of the training is actually experiencing it yourself. So you do a practicum, and wow, it even in that one session, I was able to kind of access and gain insight into things that I had not touched before. And so for me, I went home from that training going, if a student that just learned this and we can connect on this level and it can help so much, I have to learn more and how I can do this more. So that kind of just sparked it. And then I kept going through the training levels. Part of getting certified is completing the therapy yourself so that you have experienced the entire modality. And so, yeah, we just started doing that. And the more I got into it, the more I felt it, and then started using it with my clients. It just really strengthened my, like, wow, this feels like magic that I can see it happening right before my eyes.
Now, is one of the bases for lifespan integration therapy, is it kind of understanding the initial trauma points in some of the things that we're dealing with in life? Or what's kind of like the overarching help that, or maybe processes that this can help with?
Yeah, so I think it can be one of two things. We often talk about connecting like the ego states over time. That's the subtitle of one of the books about lifespan integration. And so there can be one of two focuses. We can focus on trauma or on just strengthening the core self. And so it can be one of both things where if there are significant traumas and that is feels like the most relevant thing right now, then that we can start addressing those right away. If not, and it just feels like this sense of like, I don't, I've tried a lot of things, something's still missing. I'm just not sure. And there's that kind of sense of unease, but not sure how to put your finger on it, then we can start with the core building things. And usually with that, we start uncovering insights from childhood, from adolescence, and things that then go, okay, it makes sense now why I feel this way. And then we're able to pivot or, address those needs.
Wow, that's beautiful. And it's so interesting because I mean you hear it all the time that a lot of our trauma is based off when we're young. You know, we learn how to deal with trauma at a very young age, which we're not really mentally capable to understand what trauma is, let alone deal with it. But you know, it's so interesting because like as I've done my own work, you know, and feel like I've made some progress, and then all of a sudden I get triggered, whether it's a conversation with, you know, a loved one, a family member, my kids, whatever it is, and then all of a sudden like the arms get crossed and the brow gets furrowed and the stomping foot and it's like nuh-uh, and I'm like, oh wow, 3-year-old, cool. Okay, we're still in there. All right, good. Understanding, it's good to know that you're still there. Let's physically take you out of the driver's seat. I'm gonna put you off to the side, give you some toys to play with, and this 43-year-old man's gonna attempt to ride this bus now. But it's
I love
so
that.
hard to find and really understand that until you go through it. And that's why I love that you had to go through that therapy, you know. And it's you know, I liken it to myself where, you know, I hold space for people in medicine journeys and psilocybin journeys. And I do that because I have a very intimate relationship with that medicine. And I love that there's more training programs out here now that are teaching people how to use energetic medicines in very safe ways. But the caveat to that is you've got to experience that medicine. You can't just have an understanding and read a book about it. You've got to experience ketamine. You've got to experience MDMA. You've got to experience ayahuasca or psilocybin, whatever you're holding that space for. You got to know what that's about because that's how the intimacy, I think, works with that modality, is that you experience it, you feel the magic that it can help you with.
Definitely. I think too, gosh, one of the things that they really hit on in lifespan integration, which I thought was so interesting, then later going through Reiki training, is they talk about attunement, and attunement to your client is the most important key. Saying the exact right words or anything else, but it's paying attention to those little minor shifts and even those energetic changes that you feel in the room but can't quite see with your eyes. All of those are a part of it. So I do, yeah, absolutely, going through it so you can develop that feeling, that sense for it.
So going through it yourself, what was, you know, did you have like something that kind of caught you off guard? Like, oh wow, this is something that I didn't know I had to deal with, or something maybe I thought I already dealt with, that could maybe, you know, lead to some of the understandings of the blueprint that you're living now, you know, where that kind of started from.
Yeah, actually, anytime talking about my childhood, I was always like, hey, I had a pretty normal childhood. Like we were well off. My parents were stayed married. Like none of the capital T big traumas that you would think about. However, I think a lot of times trauma isn't necessarily the bad things that happen to you. Sometimes it's the good things that didn't happen, or maybe the times that you felt not seen, not heard, or just kind of as an afterthought. And those were the things that came up for me that were just huge, that felt like such big wounds. Those times where, maybe I felt embarrassed or I felt, ridiculed for being shy, or like I tried to speak up and then was put down. And those can leave such lasting wounds and then affect how we show up in relationship now, how we talk to our friends and our loved ones. And so, oof, those hits were pretty big for me and working through those things.
And I think that's an important message for everybody to understand is that, you know, the level of capital T trauma is, it doesn't matter with the body because the body keeps the score. Great book talks about how the body just recognizes trauma. It doesn't recognize the levels of trauma. It just understands that there's trauma that's happened. So I think a lot of times, like, 'cause to your story also, you know, when I look back at my life, I had a loving family. Parents stayed together until they passed away. I have two brothers that are amazing human beings. We love each other. We all get along really great. And so, like, yeah, on the surface, I, you know, was asked that question too. And I'm like, ah, oh, childhood was great. You know, I was never without. You know, we maybe didn't have power every once in a while. You know, shit like that. But you know, for the most part, we were clothed, we were fed, we were happy. You know, all that shit was good. And but And it's not like I'm looking for the trauma. Like I'm not searching for it, but understanding that there is trauma, And so as I started to dial down into my own personal life, it's like, oh, that's right. I was overweight until I was 18. And that was a very big effect on my personality, my self-confidence, the relationship I had with my brothers. Even though my mom was in the best, doing the best she could with an overweight child, she would say things like, oh, you know that using the bathroom helps you lose weight. You lose weight when you use the bathroom, or suck in your gut so you don't seem so big. That's all coming from a very loving place, but as a child, it's just like, oh God, mom thinks I'm fat, and mom doesn't think I'm, good enough to go out in public without me pulling in my gut so I don't have this overhang over my belly, over my belt. And it's just things like that that really start to eat at you, and it can be the hiding trauma that can hurt the worst. Because if you've had some very good, very blaring trauma, it's kind of not easy to understand that, but there's modalities we got, it's right there in front of you. It's like a big sign. But when we have to search for those ones that are like, man, why do I react this way? And that's where we start to dig and we start to find those like pieces that are just so deeply woven into the intricacies of our childhood and the way we were raised.
Absolutely. Well, that was actually my experience. You just named it. Like going through the first time with EMDR, it addressed all of the big traumas. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. And then getting into lifespan work, I was like, oh gosh, there's more here that I didn't even know about.
I don't have enough time for all this work.
Yeah.
Oh man. So what application is that a main modality lifespan that you use right now with your clients? Okay. One of the things that that was really interesting to me about this is those deep early traumas. And I listened to Zach Bush, Dr. Zach Bush. I don't know if that name rings a bell for you. But he talks a lot about the archetypical story of our very first trauma, and that's birth. And so we go from, living in this world, right? We're floating in amniotic fluid. We're being fed intravenously through our bellies. We have an understanding that there's kind of sound out there, but we don't really hear it clearly. We have an understanding that there might be light out there, but our eyes are closed, so we're not fully receiving that. And then all of a sudden, the water falls out. We're upside down. Everything goes crazy. We're now breathing through orifices we never knew we could do. And then we're being pushed through this canal. It's like, oh my God, what the hell is this? But that fight through that birthing is your first archetypical success as fighting for your life, right? We fought for our life, even though we didn't know that this was part of life, right? We fought for our life. We changed everything about us in the most vulnerable state we could possibly be in as a human, and we're okay. And so, but the other point that he makes about this is, and not, I'm not, casting shame or judgment about anybody that chooses to have a C-section. It's your body; you have the right to do that, right? But one of the things he talks about is with the rise of C-sections, voluntary C-sections, not medically, necessary C-sections, we're taking away that first archetypical success. And so when you look at again, no shade, but when you look at what the perception of that lackadaisicalness of the new youth and like we don't have a lot of drive or that, whatever stereotype you can put on it, that can be also associated with that first success story because you didn't have to fight for that. All of a sudden it was just like, oh, cool. Oh, you're in trauma. Now we're just going to pull you right out. You're good to go. You didn't have to fight to get out. And so that initial fight that we used to have isn't there anymore. And so I love the idea that this work can kind of go back to that initial point and maybe create some understanding about what that success feels like if you were, birthed by a C-section or a different, different than vaginal birth. And so I'm just interested to see like as these modalities start to continue to grow, how we can integrate the depth of that trauma and how far we can start to go back with some of this stuff.
Oh yeah, I love that you bring that up. I'm super passionate about just the process of birth and mothering and attachment parenting. And I think you have such an excellent point there. I do believe, everyone has the choice to birth how they choose, but I also think there is a lot of misinformation or a lack of information out there on how that process can affect both mom and baby. And I even think, you're speaking from kind of the stress and trauma and energetic perspective, but even thinking from the neuroscience perspective, there's a difference in hormones and chemicals that happen in a C-section versus, a vaginal birth, and that then affects brain development and how the baby, responds in those first few days and things. But it is something that I have witnessed in working with clients that have had different births. When going through the lifespan integration process, as we peel back the layers and go deeper and deeper and farther back, we start getting into what's called preverbal attachment repair. And that would be like before you have explicit memories, back before you could speak. And we start getting into even like prenatal and birth memories. And so while those are implicit memories, and we have no proof other than the stories we've been told by our parents and stuff of how those things went, by noticing, my clients' bodily reactions, how emotions come up, and also how those themes of fighting for your life or motivation and things, it is so related. And I think that's something that we're starting to touch on and get into.
Yeah, and I mean to your point about the benefits of vaginal birth. Again, no shade thrown at anybody that chooses their makes their choice, but there's so much that happens with the finalization of your immune system. The microbiome you get from the vaginal canal, like all this bacteria that gets into your immune system that helps finalize that and helps kind of construct all that on the way out. The example that I have in my own personal life is my youngest daughter was born with the umbilical cord around her neck, and so she was born blue faced. Went through the vaginal canal without breathing. And she's fine. She's 14 now. She's got no problems. But the issue that she does have is she has a compromised immune system. So she's lactose intolerant. She's gluten intolerant in certain ways. We're still figuring this all out. But, when I look back at that, because her sister, 19-year-old sister, siblings are always different, but her sister has no issues at all. Like none of the immune system issues. And, the more I started to think about it as I started to get older and more into the spiritual realm, and then I heard this thing with Zach Bush, that makes complete sense to me. If your airway was constricted as you were going through that vaginal canal, then that microbiome is not going to get in your system the way it might have normally with through the respiration and all that stuff. And so there will be some kind of incomparable or just like incomplete ness with that immune system or that that nervous system. So there's so much with that. And now, I mean, with the I don't want to say popularization, but maybe the more accepted understanding that C-sections are a viable option, not just for medical emergencies, but for choices as well. And we see that rise in the population of these kids that are being birthed outside of the C-section. I wonder what that study is going to look like as we start to see this more often. And not to throw shade at and not to really kind of buy into the idea that they're that the youth today doesn't have the drive that we used to, and this is one of those reasons why. If you look at the world, I don't want to be a part of this world either. I wouldn't blame a kid for not wanting to be a part of this world and interact with it. It's kind of fucked up. But to just blanket it as that, I don't think is really correct. But to add that as a factor into the soup of what the possibilities could be, I think it's very interesting to see, where these kind of studies will go in the next few decades.
Absolutely. Yeah, just something to consider.
Always, always. So with lifespan integration and body-based trauma therapy, are these are all these modalities you can kind of work with the client, kind of layer in different ways? Okay. So with body-based trauma therapy, so let's talk about that one for a little bit. So what's kind of the basis of that and how you got into that?
So a lot of that is just getting clients, and Hannah is has a big part in this because Hannah really helped teach me how to get connected with my body. Meeting her in the process of going through lifespan integration, it was like this beautiful marriage in my life where all of these healing things were happening. But for my clients, it's a matter of teaching them how to reconnect with their body. I think in the world we live in, it's so fast, our phones, just dopamine everywhere, and stress, we tend to come live just up in our head, and then we have these bodily sensations of anxiety or, gastrointestinal issues, things like that. And we don't necessarily see how they're connected. And so I really like to slow things down and get clients to like, hey, what are you noticing in your body? What sensations? And with the help of things like biofeedback, with heart rate variance, or with sound healing tools because of the vibration and how it can be felt, we can really kind of clear out that static a little bit and help them tune in a little bit more.
Yeah. Most of the clients that I see in my energy work sessions, whether sound or energy work in general, there's just a cloudiness in the head. And it's just like all the energy in your body is just up here because we think that's the important part, right? We're thinkers, we're doers, right? The body is just a meat suit that kind of like assists the brain and the consciousness and what it does. And I fell into that trap for a long time, and I still kind of dip in and out of it. You know, there's times where like a week goes by and I'm like, I've not felt my body all week, even though I did yoga, I meditated, I've been living in my head and the stories and all the bullshit. And you know, just the integration of the body is so damn smart. It's way like I found out my body's smarter than my head, you know. And I just you know, dismissed it for so long. So like, how do you, what are some of the ways to get people back into their bodies? Because we've been, I mean, it's almost a conditioning to where the body is just an afterthought, even if it's an afterthought.
I think, I mean, as simple as it sounds, it's getting in touch with things like the breath and your heart. One of the things I really love about biofeedback and heart rate variance is it can kind of help. It almost has digitized getting back in touch with your heart because it comes with an app on your phone and a little clip that goes on your ear. But learning how to feel what coherence feels like. So with this particular app, you have an ear clip and it tracks the changes in your heartbeat. Normally, when you inhale, it'll be a little bit shorter between each heartbeat. And when you exhale, that distance will lengthen. But when we're stuck in fight or flight or stress, there is little change or it doesn't follow that pattern. And so that registers as stress. And this app will track that and it tracks your breathing as you this mandala, closes and opens. And so it actually tells you by red light, green light, blue light, if you're in coherence or not. And so when you get to that match, it's like, hey, good job. Now feel it. Recognize this feeling in your body. Because for some people, if they've never felt that before, how can you tell them to get there? And so we use equipment to kind of train it. And then once they get there, we can develop that recognition and it can serve as an anchor point for them later when they're out in the world. They can remember, I can slow down and I have this place I can get back into.
Wow. You know, one of the things that we talk a lot about in the show is teaching humans how to use the body we're born with. You know, like why do we have to like as an afterthought take these courses when we get to be adults to learn how to breathe, to learn how to meditate, to learn how to calm ourselves down, when this could be just part of like your childhood curriculum. You know, this is you as a child. Hey, guess what? You're anxious right now. Sit down and meditate for a little bit. You know, this is move your body ecstatically. Go run around and just like wave your arms to whatever beat that you hear in your head. You know, like let's get some of this shit out. Like you're scared. You just a snake just crossed your path. Cool. Okay, you're safe. You feel safe. Now shake your arms, shake your legs, jump around, get that fucking anxiety out. You know, there's a book that I've been reading called Why We Sleep, and it's a fascinating book about sleep. And I mentioned that because you mentioned fight or flight, and one of the things that they talked about in this and in the chapter I'm just reading right now is how mammals are supposed to naturally wake up. We have a natural sleep cycle, and I mean if you look in nature, you know, bears don't have alarm clocks, you know, the bird's not sitting there waiting for the snooze button and shit like that. But we have as upright bipedal mammals, you know, we've designed an economy and a world that we have to start at a certain time and we end at a certain time. And so with that alarm clock that wakes us up immediately when that goes off, it doesn't matter how soothing it is or how peaceful and shit, you know, how demonic some of these damn alarm clocks are. There's actually an alarm clock out there that that you set the alarm and then it has a pad on top that has five different shaped blocks and then five corresponding holes. And as soon as that alarm clock goes off, the pad explodes and all of those blocks go shooting around your room. And that alarm won't go off until you find all the blocks and put them in the corresponding holes. Like, how fucking
That sounds
terrible is
like
a
a
way to wake
terrible.
up like that?
Just start your day angry and chaos.
Right. So the point that this person was making is that like all of these alarm clocks induce fight or flight. So we're waking up in a state of panic. And if we hit the snooze button in 9 minutes, guess what? You're going to have another little panic attack. And then you hit the snooze button again. And then in 9 more minutes, another panic attack. So we're starting our day in a very abrupt way, whether we're peaceful. Like I sit and meditate every morning, but I've also woken up to an alarm clock for 35 years, you know, and it wasn't until recently when I got rid of the alarm clock, started waking up naturally, that I can actually feel the meditation working for what it's supposed to and not bring me back up to a base level because I just had a mini panic attack. You know, so it's interesting, like as we start to find this stuff and come up with these understandings of what we are, how we integrate this and how we, you know, inform these new therapies that have been out there to help us kind of like curb and work around these, you know, cultural traditions that we've just kind of instilled in us.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And I think even just teaching people how to recognize that sensation of fight or flight in their body so they can realize how much of their day, how much of their energy they're spending on that can help them just gain more like decision-making power and control in their lives on how they want to go forward.
Yeah. So with these types of therapies, do you usually work with individuals on this, or I know you're a family therapist as well. So is this like, mm-hmm. you know, get the family unit together and let's experience some of this. And then we start to unpack this. And I understand how my dad works a little bit better now. And I understand how my little sister works a little bit better now. And so I can maybe share that space and not go into my reaction mode when something happens.
Yeah, absolutely. It's individuals, couples, families. I love working with families, especially in couples, because we can talk about co-regulation. Mm. We can, you know, practice getting into coherence together and go, hey, do you guys feel, can you feel that together? How this is different than when things feel chaotic? How can we bring a little bit more of this into your home? And absolutely, like you mentioned, learning about the other members of our system and their patterns and then how that, you know, influences the system and affects things. I think that knowledge is power, right?
Really?
And sometimes we fall into these patterns and we're like, wow, why does this keep happening? But if we can take a bird's eye view and understand it, you know, more from an objective perspective, then we'll know, okay, when I do this, it leads to this, or when this happens, it means this, I can show up differently.
It's so interesting. You've just basically explained a relationship with an ADHD person in my life, you know, and it's like, you know, for the longest time, I'm like, what the F is going on? Why can't you just do this? Why can't you put your stuff away? Why can't whatever it is? And it was that understanding, that step back, that zoom out lens and noticing the consistency and knowing that it's not personal, knowing that that person doesn't want to like induce trauma in my life or, you know, give me extra work. So it was that like zoom out and say, oh, okay, this is just part of, you know, this is part of what's going on. There's no malice behind it, you know? And so if I can take my emotion away from it, and see it as maybe a way I'm helping this person instead of I'm cleaning up after this person, you know, we can change mm-hmm. the way that that's being received by us, and then we can show up a little bit differently.
Absolutely. I think that's a beautiful part of therapy when there's more than one person too, or even with individuals, is learning what part do you play in it, and not to cast any blame, but I tend to explain it like I study from a systems perspective. I think of everything as a system. And so any little small change is going to affect the whole system, but that can be actually really motivating in some sense, because a lot of times we're like, oh, why won't this person do this? Why won't this person do this? And we expect the other person to make the first move. Mm-hmm. But if you think about it, like, what can I change to show up to this differently? And knowing that you are a part of a system, and any change that you implement inherently will change the system, can just give some hope.
Yeah. And that kind of goes to the concept of like the maybe we don't understand it. And I can, personal experience, I didn't know that I thought I was always right. Like, I didn't know that I was the person that was like, no, my way is the right way. Until stuff like this started to happen. And I'm like, there's 8.5 billion people in this world, dude, and multiple cultures, multiple ways to approach life. The fact that you put your dishes in the sink and I put mine in the dishwasher doesn't make you a fucking bad person. You know, that doesn't mean that you were raised wrong. That doesn't mean all that shit, right? And so this like concept of like, oh man, I think I'm right all the time. Like, that's stupid. I'm an ignorant person. I'm self-proclaimed ignorant person. So how can I go around thinking I'm right all the time subconsciously? You know, and it was one of those understandings of like, this is, we all got work to do, but this is your work, right? You can't expect somebody else to change the way you think about yourself and the way that you change, you know, you think about the way you approach life. That's that self introspective stuff that you got to figure out on your own, or have somebody hold that space for you. But, you know, it was, you know, that I just don't think a lot of us realize how much we've fallen into that trap of, you know, my way is the way, you know, you should conform to my way. What age do you start with you know, helping with people, you know, because it seems like you could go really young with this. Obviously you can go as old as you want, but it seems like the this can start at a really young age.
Absolutely. I think, I mean, school age really, or just anywhere we can have kind of some communication and start teaching those skills of slowing down, breathing. I think the younger, the better, to be honest, especially if we can get some family parental involvement. It can really change the trajectory of the whole family system.
Yeah.
But I also think it's never too late. You know, our brains are very plastic, you know, they love changing. I like to think of it like a path in the woods. You know, we walk the same path over and over, and then it's the easiest one to take. Mm-hmm. And that's how our habits form. But when we consciously make the choice to go, you know, I'm not going to take that path anymore, I'm going to forge a new one. It's difficult at first, but we can make those new paths in our brain, especially with the help of, you know, other tools and things, just to help get a fresh start.
Yeah. There's a guy named Michael Pollan that wrote a book, How to Change Your Mind. That's been turned into a Netflix miniseries now, and it's fantastic. I mean, the whole concept behind it, you know, a plus 60-year-old man that has never taken a hallucinogenic in his life decided to go on embark on every single hallucinogenic you can take and then write a chapter about each one. Phenomenal.
I love that.
It's so good. But, you know, a lot of what he talks about in that book is, you know, the usage of plant medicines or these energetic medicines to kind of what you talked about. He talks about the analogy he uses is fresh sled tracks in new snow. Right. Yes. And so, like, if you've been going down the same mountain for a long time, those sled tracks get deep. You know, it's really deep, and you can't really veer off them because they've already been established. So when you start to make these new tracks, whether with, you know, therapies, plant medicines, things like that, where we basically put down a fresh coat of snow and then we start making new tracks, you might get veered back to the old tracks because they're so deep and rooted, but you know those new tracks are available, right? And so it's that conscious shift of moving back to these new tracks and saying, okay, that was the story of scarcity that I lived in for whatever time. And okay, I see myself moving back there, but guess what? I'm loved. I got abundance. I've got a job that's great. I've got kids that are fantastic. I've got a good life. I got a spouse. I got blah, blah, whatever it is that you've got in your life. But it is that consciously moving that, you know, switching the track. Okay, I've noticed myself moving down this, you know, story of scarcity again. Switch to the story of abundance. And it's that, you know, it is that constant back and forth. And whatever modality that you need to use to lay that fresh powder on, explore the modalities because there's a lot out there for it.
Yeah. And the modalities, lifespan integration and anything body-based trauma can help with that rewiring. I think, you know, when we learn to get in touch with our heart and stop acting out of that fight or flight place and start making decisions with our rational mind, I think a lot of times people, you know, I would love for more people to know that when we're stuck in fight or flight, we make those decisions based in fear, those like scarcity and lack decisions. And it's just your body trying to protect you. It's just your body trying to go, hey, we got to keep you safe. We got to keep you safe. But we're literally unable to make those decisions out of an abundance mindset when our nervous system is activated. And so if we can calm it down, we bring our rational brain back online and then we go, okay, let me think about this differently. And then with lifespan, the way that it works and kind of goes through things, it brings up memories in a way that allows your brain to refile them and put them back in different places, you know, for lack of a better word. But that is what gives the room and the space for different thought processes or different insights, because you're not going right to the easiest file anymore.
Right, right. And I think, you know, the long-term effects of, you know, starting this therapy at a young age or introducing this to an understanding at a young age, maybe we can create the space through that generational learning and understanding to be able to step away from a heated conversation if you're not showing up the way you're proud of being showing up as. You know, we can create the space to be like, hey, you know what? I hear what you're saying. I want to respond in kind, but right now I need to remove myself from this so I can understand how I want to respond and I don't continue to trigger you, or I can get the clearest message that I want. Whereas now we just get triggered and then we just kind of respond, react. And a lot of that respond and react is just to the vehemence that's across from us. And so even if we have an ignorant statement that might not be the best thought through, but that's what we started our argument on, we're going to dig our heels into that because aggression met with ignorance is just going to dig us in deeper to our ignorance. You know, so, you know, having these therapies and having the, like instilling this mindset of listening to your body, finding out when you're triggered, understand when the traumas happen, create space when you need to, find a safe space. You know, I really hope that that can be integrated into the world so that we can go back to having safe disagreements with people. And then through those disagreements, that's where we find the agreements because, again, I'm not always right. I know I'm not always right. So the stuff I say can't always be right. So meeting somebody with a differing opinion can only strengthen either your understanding of what your opinion is or can layer in some new information to be like, oh shit, I was fucking wrong about that. All right, let's
Absolutely.
figure this out together.
That's how we learn, when there is a little bit of friction, but we can keep our cool about it and kind of work through that, then what's on the other side, is amazing.
Yep, that's why I love having kids. You know, kids are like the best teachers we never thought we'd have. You know, I never thought I'd have a little
They sure are.
14-year-old teacher. But you know, like they see the world in ways we didn't, just like we saw the world in the ways our parents didn't. You know, and having two young children, you know, and I hear adults talk all the time about the youth of today, and you know, they're all so fucking sheltered, or you know, blah blah, whatever it is, whatever you know, thing you want to say about the kids, man. I encourage that so much. Like when the kids talk about how they don't understand how we work all the time, or how you drink to celebrate, you drink to mourn, you drink when you're pissed off, you drink when you want to forget something. It's like, I don't understand that either. And thank you for bringing that up because that was a mentality that we just accepted for a long time. So like we need these kids to shake us loose of these values and things that we just thought were the way to do things. Have this brand new, fresh set of eyes, this 8-year-old coming up to you and be like, I haven't seen you since like last Tuesday, and you've just been working. What the fuck, man? Can we at least have dinner together? Can you watch a cartoon with me? Like, can you do something in my life other than work? Like, I get you're providing, but like, let's create a relationship.
Oh, they teach so much about balance and like healthy boundaries.
Oh, yes. So, avian entrainment is one of my newest kind of like, just super awesome things that I can't get enough of, and I can't find enough people doing it. So I have a float place around the corner from me over in the Kirkland area, and floating is one of my favorite new things. So the deprivation tanks, you get in a big ass tank, you're in a room by yourself, you have 200 gallons of water, but it's only about 8 inches deep, so you're not going to drown. And it's 200 pounds of Epsom salt. You lay in there and you float, and your sensory ears are deprived. You got darkness. You can have music if you want. You can like add in other stuff, but I like just quiet, dark, get me in there for 90 minutes and I'm just gonna float, right? But so that gentleman that runs the place, I came in one day and he was like, hey, you like weird shit? I'm like, yes, I do like weird shit. And he's like, hey, I got this new thing. I wanna try it out. If you're willing to, give it a shot. I'm like, yeah, of course, man. So he sets me down. And he's got this, he put this light disc in front of me that was probably about 8 inches in diameter, and it had headphones attached to it. And all on the disc were all these different LED lights. And he said, okay, put the headphones on. I'm gonna put this thing about, 8 inches in front of your face, close your eyes, and you're gonna sit there for 20 minutes, breathe, do whatever. And I think the setting he put it on was like a meditative setting. And he said there's different settings you can like induce like LSD type things and all this different stuff. And so I did that for 20 minutes and then I floated for 90 minutes. And it was like, I need more of that in my life.
Just bliss,
It
yeah.
was so amazing. And I've done a little bit of light therapy before, but that was my first like official kind of thing. And I just, it was amazing. And so learning that that's something that you offer, and I can pick your brain about that. This is the best. So what brought you to the avian entrainment? Like, how did that kind of like stair step its way into your practices?
Oh man, this is one of my favorite things to nerd out about. So it's actually my personal therapist. After EMDR, I was feeling stuck And it was before I had learned about lifespan integration, actually just about a month before. She had recommended, she was like, hey, there's this light device that, and she was like, I think you should just go try it. It can be meditative. It can just kind of release some stuff, you know. What do you got to lose? And I'm like, absolutely,
Hell
let's
yeah.
give it a whirl. And I had a session, and my session was about 40 minutes. And wow, I don't know how to explain it. I was like weeping through my session. So much emotion was coming up, and I was like, there's something to this. I need to learn about this. So I had come home actually from that appointment and talked to my partner and was just like, oh my gosh, I had this experience. And he was working, interning at a different place from me, and he went and talked to his supervisor. And his supervisor was like, oh, huh, funny that you bring something like that. You guys will probably have fun with these. And he gave us a couple of devices, sets of glasses actually, and was like, just go play with them. Let us know what you think. So we brought them home and then, you know, studying the neuroscience and brain waves and then testing them out on each other. It was a set of glasses that has flickering lights. And then we actually didn't like the music or the pairings that came with the headphones. So we started pairing it with things that we just felt were like healing and soothing tones, and we would match based on whatever goals the client wanted, or that, you know, we wanted at first. And so we started just having these really profound experiences of relaxation or of just new insight, feeling less anxiety, and just noticing kind of this ripple effect. And then the more we looked into the research articles and the actual studies that have been done about this technology, we just started uncovering how it's been helpful for things like PTSD, for ADHD, for anxiety, just to help lower cortisol levels in the body, even for traumatic brain injury. They've used it to bring blood flow to the brain to help with healing. So it
Wow.
just opened up this, like, you know, amazing world of new possibilities of healing. And so we started incorporating that, and I found that it is so helpful for people that are like, I can't meditate. Anytime I try to meditate, I just can't shut my brain off. Well, this will actually use the mirror neurons in your brain to gently guide your brain into a meditative state. And it doesn't matter how busy it is, it can't help it. It will match up. So, and then like earlier, how we talked about it will give that anchor point. Like, oh, this is what it feels like to be in a state of relaxation. And then it makes those paths easier to get to subsequently.
Yeah, I'm so happy you made the statement about meditation because like meditation is a modality that's it's been super helpful for me. It's really helped me calm my mind, calm my body, connect with my body, all that fun stuff. But also understanding that if the world is riddled with anxiety and ADHD and things like that, these neurodivergence and things like that, we can't expect people just to sit down and meditate and be like, no, just meditate, it'll be fine. When you can't get your brain straight, or you can't stop moving. That's asking somebody to basically put themselves into fight or flight, you know? And so,
Absolutely.
you know, finding those ways, those modalities that can help calm the brain so that you can find what you consider a meditative state. And the modality that I use is sound healing. You know, I'll create so much sound that your brain can't hear the thoughts it's thinking. It's just going to push it all out, whether it's a crystal bowl or a gong. There's not going to be anything for you to think about, right? Because we're just going to create that space. And so knowing that there's that, you know, AV entrainment, binaural beats, you know, these different things that we have now that can help us find the meditative space, because not everybody has either the body ability or the mental capacity to meditate. Like if you have an injury in your body and you're expected to sit down for 10 hours and meditate in a Vipassana meditation, yeah, that's going to be probably one of the most terrifying and traumatic things you've done in your life, right? And that's not going to help. It's going to start hurting, right? And so how do we induce those things in a safer way because we know the benefit, but meeting the human where they're at instead of forcing the human to meet the modality?
Absolutely. How frustrating, you know, I can imagine it. And even for me before, when people are like, oh, just try to breathe, just try to meditate. And I'm like, do you know what my life is like? I can't get there. But now to have these tools that can go, hey, this can provide some scaffolding, or this can be the boat to get you to that island that feels inaccessible. And then we build that muscle, you know, we can build those skills. So then you don't always need that help to get there.
So have you found So with the you mentioned that the audio didn't really match with what you were wanting with the visual. So have you found an audio or audio tracks that match with the visual, or have you found that the visual by itself does as much as it needs to?
Yeah, so actually, we have really played a lot with this and fine-tuned it. The audio that originally came with it was a lot of binaural beats and isochronic tones. And for me personally, that just feels irritating to my brain. I just don't like the noise of it. It does not feel calming.
Yeah.
So we started to study the different brain wave states, from delta, theta, alpha, beta, gamma. Low to high, and we then started going into actually the sound frequencies of those. Like, we looked into chakras and then how different sounds and different frequencies for different notes can affect your different energetic states. So, really, when we have a client come in and explain what they are wanting out of that, our programs are custom tailored for them. The light frequency is tailored to what brainwave state we would like to target, and then the sound frequency we choose is complementary to that to support getting to that state.
Wow.
We even now with the glasses, we can choose a color, so we can even have a different color that feels, more soothing or whatever the client, more energizing if that is what they're going for.
Wow. So as a practitioner, you can start to customize the settings to what you're seeing your clientele wanting. That's so amazing. I love that so much. What's some of the things that you found this working with that was just like, oh my God, I can't believe that just that was helpful, or this is now applicable to this type of, trauma or this type of help that you found.
Gosh, a lot of things. And I'm not a doctor and I can't say that this will happen for everybody, but these are just the things that I've noticed. I've noticed like better sleep, a reduction in nightmares, a reduction in chronic pain, reduction in anxiety or depressive symptoms, better concentration, just
Wow.
overall ability to take a breath and slow things down rather than get caught up in that rumination, spin cycle that just tends to go faster and faster.
Yeah. And man,
And
that's.
it seems like, as people experience and get in touch with, I call it like that inner space, that where they go in their own mind and are kind of figuring things out for themselves in that meditative space. I think the more they access that with the lights, the less they need it. And they actually are able to go, I was able to just kind of lay in bed and feel relaxed on my own.
Wow. It's gosh, there's so many modalities that are coming out now, whether it's, what we're talking about with AV entrainment or plant medicines in some kind of way that and I'm not using this word. Well, I'm very hesitant to use this word, but there's almost like we're finding ways to actually heal people now and not just put band-aids on people,
I
and that's
really.
it's just it's so interesting. Like I remember having conversations like 2, 3 years ago with people and making the comment like I'll never put the ED at the end of the word heal. Like I'll always be ING. I'm always healing. I'll never be healed. And now we have these modalities that are coming out, like you're talking about AV entrainment that can help us like get understand when we're moving towards these spaces and find modalities to keep us back. There's extreme cases of PTSD with military personnel that are now being cured with ibogaine and 5-MeO-DMT bufo. And it's like it's things that we've just been throwing narcotics at for decades and decades and decades, getting people addicted on other things that are supposed to be the healing that they're trying to find, never having success, and now we're finding these modalities that are sometimes ancient, that have been around before we could even imagine the technology working, that is now fixing people and layering that, like, I don't have PTSD anymore, or my anxiety is now gone. And that's not for everybody, but the few people that I've heard that from, Jesus Christ, man, that's I can only imagine living a life in state of panic or fight or flight, and then finally finding the modality that lets you breathe and lets you be a human.
Yeah, that lets you feel like you are the driver of your life again, not just be taken for a ride.
Yeah.
And I love what you said about these ancient things, because I truly believe that we're almost in a remembering of things that we have forgotten, and just we now have the science and technology to explain it differently. Because I even think about, culturally, how people would gather around a fire and they would drum, they would tell stories. And then thinking about it now, oh, a fire flickers at between 10 and 20 hertz. Those are often the hertz we use with the light. Sound healing and drumming and vibration, and how that can help your brain get into that meditative state. And even telling stories and going over, like, hey, this is the story of your life, which isn't exactly, but it's so similar to what we do in lifespan integration to access the story parts that have been forgotten or that are too wounded to touch. And just incorporating those things, it feels like things are coming back and we're remembering how to connect and heal one another again.
Definitely. And that, the remembering, I love that. Actually, I have the word remember tattooed on my knuckles. And it is that remembering, but it's also like the remembering, right? We're reestablishing our member as a human being by remembering these things. And there's I think, it might have been our previous conversation that we had as in our pre-interview. And if it wasn't, I apologize, but I remember somebody saying that the initial forms of AV entrainment back in ancient times, thousands of years ago, they would sit around a fire and place a wheel and then spin the wheel, and the way the wheel spun would change the way that the fire would come out and also kind of emulate that AV entrainment.
Exactly. There's even an art installation that was decades ago called the Dream Machine, that literally was a light beam with a spinning metal disc with cutouts, and people would circle around and just sit and watch it. And you can Google the art made from that and how similar the art and all of it is fractal and geometric and very, just how the experiences are of people going under the light.
And the more we start to come up with these instruments to prove the woo-woo, right? It's so interesting to see how this stuff is going to be integrated. There's a talk I listened to a while back, not too long ago, just a few months ago, and it was a talk on quantum physics, and one of the new realizations they had about quantum physics and how the connection of society and connection of humans and connection of everything, right? And the way they talked about it, and it was a person making a presentation in front of a bunch of people. And the way they talked about it was like, okay, so think about like a spider web across the entire universe, and at each point in the spider web that it connects, there's a jewel that hangs down, and that jewel that hangs down represents every single, it represents a person, a thing, or whatever it is. And when you look at all the jewels, if you look at one jewel, you can see the reflection of every jewel in that one jewel, showing that there's a connection between all of this, right? And this was a speech that they gave at this quantum physics emporium. A doctor came up to this person afterwards, a speaker, and was like, "Hey, so loved what you said. That was beautiful the way you explained it. Have you ever heard the story of Indra's net?" And the doctor was like, "Don't even know who Indra is, right?" And Indra, if you don't know, is one of the Hindu gods. It was fabled to be the creator, right? Indra and Brahma were the creators of the universe. And the story of Indra's net is during creation, Indra threw out a net over the universe, and at every integral part, every integrating part, there was a gem that hung down, and that reflected every other gem within that, showing the importance not only of the individual, but all the other people around it, all the other gems around it. So basically, what we've just discovered as being a story and an understanding of quantum physics is the very first story that was ever written in the Vedas. Indra's
I
net.
love.
So, just like these understandings that were just, kind of scoffed at as myth and fairy tale and all this shit is now being proven from to the point where you didn't have instruments to understand any of this stuff. I love that. I love the fact that we're finding things out that we, with all these, specialized instruments and all this stuff, we've got to prove our shit when, thousands of years ago, they were just like, "Oh, look at the cosmos. This is what it is. Cool. Got it."
Oh, I love that. Even I came across a blog article on the American Counseling Association, and I was like dancing because it was talking about Reiki, but it was calling it bio and or biofield energetics, and talking about how your biofield can affect those around you and all of these. And I just think about, we talk about the vibe check, right? And how if someone walks into a room, you're like drawn to them, or you're like, oh, I don't really want to go around them. Why can we feel that? Why is that unexplainable? But everybody has that intuitive feeling, and now we're starting to quantify it through science and understand it better.
Yeah, there was an inadvertent study done a couple years ago, and so the basis of the study was they wanted to understand people's reactions to questionable news, and so the setup was they had the person giving the bad news or the questionable news in a room at a desk, and the other person was sitting across from them. So the person would come in, they'd shake hands, say, "Hi, my name's Adam." And then they sit down and be like, "Okay, give me a minute." The presenter would say, "Give me a minute. I got to do something." And then they would leave. And then the idea was to come back, judge their persona before they left, and then judge their persona after they were given the news. And so, but what ended up happening was scenario happened. People would come in, shake hands. The presenter would leave for a minute. They're videotaping this the whole time. And what they noticed when they looked back at the videotape was that a percentage of people after the presenter left smelled the hand that they shook the hand with, and it was over 50%. And so, and the people running the experiment were like, "Wait, what is this? This is not even something we wanted to test. We didn't even think about testing this, and all of a
Not on
sudden
here.
this is happening in front of us." And so they called all the people back in, and they were like, "Do you realize that you did this?" And they showed him the tape of like, "Hey, shaking my hand, I'm gonna leave," and then all of a sudden it's like. And so the ideas that they're working with now is that, we used to be able to smell pheromones and hormones and understand just like animals do. They go up and they can smell fear, they can smell anxiety, they can smell all this stuff. We used to have that ability. These are just, atrophied muscles that we just don't use anymore, so they're not there. But the instinctualness for a lot of us is still that, where we can still sense people's smells, we can sense people's energies, we can understand, what's going on. I have a good friend of mine that can smell diabetes on somebody's breath just by the way that they breathe, because there's a pungentness to it, And so like there's all these abilities that we've had for so long that we've just kind of abandoned and maybe let atrophy, but that doesn't mean we can't build them back up. So I think, like ideas like this and practices like this AV entrainment, body awareness, like all this stuff to get us back in touch with who we are, not with the environment around us, but let's get with this person, let's get with this understanding so that we can understand the environment around us on a deeper, more intimate level. So
Yeah.
interesting. So right now you have two Spokane locations for Embodied Psyche, right? And
Kind of. Okay. So I'm currently operating out of Anamkara,
okay.
while our location on the north side is under renovation.
All right, very cool. Will you stay at Anamkara when the north side location opens up too?
Probably be operating out of both locations.
Beautiful. So where does Alchemy Hilliard kind of play into all this then?
So Alchemy Hilliard, gosh, we're right in Greater Hilliard off of Crestline. And that was kind of, I mean, honestly, it was a vision that just kind of came to me after a sound bath,
Awesome.
to be quite honest. I just was like, wow, I grew up in Hilliard. I went to Rogers. Hilliard is just, I love it. It's also one of the poorest communities in Washington, and it's not really talked about a lot. And so there's a lot of growth and things happening there, a lot of new businesses. And I'm just like, man, we need a healing center. We need, my people need something accessible that they can go to and connect and learn how to like break this cycle of violence and poverty and trauma and all this stuff that feels like it's keeping, everyone stuck. And so I just kind of on a whim was like, oh wow, I have this dream. Let's just see what happens. And I think the older I've gotten, I've learned that when you get those little weird inklings from your gut, the more I lean into the weird stuff, the more awesome things happen. And it's always the stuff where you're like, people are gonna think I'm crazy. But yeah, I just started kind of putting out feelers and looking at buildings, and I knew I wanted it to be in Hilliard, and talking with Hannah and getting a lot of guidance from her, and one thing kind of led to another, and we signed on a 2,400 square foot building. At the beginning of the summer and then started renovation. We totally gutted it and are doing new everything on the inside. And so we will be providing all of these services, like psychotherapy, lifespan integration, the audiovisual entrainment, and Reiki, as well as group services like sound baths, art workshops, and also things to learn about, psychoeducation about the trauma cycle, about how to get into coherence, about learning about your attachment needs. And just, I think everyone has a right to know these things and to learn these things so that they can have the tools to live the lives they want. And I see a gap, and so we're going to try to fill that.
Yes, that's healing should not be based off your income, right? It's almost like a privilege, you know, not if
It
you
is.
if you're worried about like if you have four jobs to survive and can provide for your family, when do you have time to meditate? When do you have time to sit down and like, you know, do a breathwork practice? You know, you're so busy with, you know, keeping all the plates spinning and, you know, whatever it is for you that, you know, we need to be able to offer these things for all levels of income, for all levels of humanity, for all levels of culture, and not just like, you know, I charge a specific price for my sessions, but also for the people that can't pay what that price is, pay what you can, because the people that can pay might pay a little bit more. And like to your
Absolutely.
point of like, you know, when you do the weird shit, stuff just happens the way it's supposed to. Like when I got out of my own way of saying, no, this is my set price, to the point of like, no, everybody needs this, and you know, you pay what you can, we'll all figure this out. Actually, end up making more money than I would have if I just charged the set price for the people that are there. Because again, the people that can pay will pay a little bit more for the people that can't pay, and that's that reciprocity that I think that shows that like I've got something, I'm a little more comfortable, so I know that I can do this. But I'm going to pay my way. I'm going to pay the way for somebody else. I don't even know who that person is. I'm going to just anonymously pay a little bit extra so that somebody else can get a little bit, because we all need this in our own rights. And the other
Well, I
thing I
think
want
that's
to.
beautiful.
Yeah.
It helps the person giving to know that they're helping someone. I mean, helping another human is such a healing experience for yourself. And then also for the person receiving that to know that someone in their community has their back and wants them to experience this healing also. I just think it just fosters a sense of like, we're not alone in this.
Yeah, most definitely. And I got to commend you too, because there, you know, I grew up in a questionable part of the South, and I was very happy to leave, very happy to get out of there. You know, it was lower middle class. There's a lot of racism in the time. You know, there's a lot of, you know, sexism, separatism. It's the South in the 80s and 90s. It was just kind of running rampant with all that. So when I got my opportunity to leave, I left, didn't look back. But and I listened to this gentleman talk a while back. His name is Michael Render. He's a his rap name is Killer Mike. He goes by Killer Mike. He's an MC and he's also in Run the Jewels. Great guy. Fucking love his music. Love his stance as a human. But he made this post a while back where he talked about when he grew up in Atlanta, dealt drugs, did nefarious kid shit. And when he got to the point of where he was making money, he left and he was like, "Fuck this, I'm out. Don't want to be here anymore." But then he made the conscious choice to come back, because if we're not giving back to the impoverished area that we came from, who else is? Right? So he got out, he made himself, he made some money, he got some, you know, record deals, all that stuff, then decided to come back and reinvest in his community, because if he doesn't help, who's going to, right? And so I got to commend you for that, you know, 'cause so many times we just want to get away from where we were. That's the source of my trauma, that's the source of my, you know, my childhood, my woes, whatever it is, and I just want to leave that behind me. But to go back and to understand that, you know, this area needs help, because if it doesn't get the help, it's not going to continue to survive. And maybe I can create an area to where it can not only just survive, but it can thrive, right? And so like I got to commend you for that, because that's such a strong stance to take and such a beautiful like example to lead with, to show like, hey, you know, you might have left for a reason, but those people still need some help. So if you have the ability to help, get back there and show some love.
Yeah, absolutely. I truly believe that, when we know better, we can do better. And nobody wants to stay stuck in survival mode.
Right.
Nobody wants to stay stuck feeling like crap and like, oh, I don't even know how to make it through another day. And I just imagine if we can put just the tiniest like cog in the wheel, just to pause it and go, hey, there's a different way. we can learn how to heal and we can do this together, how that ripple effect can go out into the community. There's so many families and young kids and just, yeah, I have a lot of hope for, because I know that the community is hungry for change.
Yeah. Yeah. And start with the kids. The kids are going to be the ones that have the longevity for this, you know, like I hope I see a lot of these changes in my lifetime, and maybe I will, maybe I won't, but I'm very confident in the kids that are coming up in this world. Like the conversations I've had with these children, whether, you know, from the, you know, early 20s, I'm 43, so everybody's a kid to me, but you know, from the early 20s to goddamn toddlers, you know, I see an awareness in these little humans that I never had, that I never even thought of having, that I barely have now, and I'm in my damn 40s, you know? And so to see that in these kids, and to hear their questions and sometimes be triggered by their questions or their outlook on society, but then to kind of help, not help them understand it, but to walk them through the understanding that I have, so then they can be even more confused about why we do the shit that we do, you know. It's like, okay, you've just explained it to me, I still don't understand. Like, there's got to be a different way, and there is. We've just kind of fallen into this pattern, and a lot of us has accepted it, some of us don't, but there's a big generation of humans coming through this world that don't fucking accept it, and that want to do better and want to be better and want to heal themselves, want to be part of this society, but not work their asses off just to survive. They want to create, they want to be cultured, they want to just, it's so embracing, and I love it so much. I'm so excited for it.
Yeah, they're demanding a difference, and I think it's beautiful. I love it.
Hell yeah. Well, thank you for being part of that difference that they can offer, you know, just helping people start to unpack some of this stuff so that we can be a little more well-adjusted at whatever age group that we find ourselves in our healing journeys. I'm so happy to have had this conversation with you and to see what you're doing and how you're, you know, just melding these modalities together, finding ways to meet the human where they're at and just helping heal humanity. It's such a beautiful thing.
Thank you so much. I feel so absolutely honored to be able to do this every day. And also, thanks so much for having me on here. Talking to you is like great. I love talking to, you know, like mind and just discussing these things and
the information share. You know, the more we can get it out there, the more conversations we have, I think that's where the healing happens. You know, just knowing that it's out there, knowing that there's beautiful people out there to hold that space, and you know, we'll just keep moving those pieces forward. Well, thank you so much. I'm so excited to continue our relationship and to have you back on the show in the future. If there's ever anything I can do to help you on your journey, please let us know.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks so much, Adam. Have an awesome day.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for spending time with Teresa and I. Please check out the show notes for ways to get in touch with Teresa, maybe book a session with her, or to find out more that she does and what she offers. Obeisance and love. We'll see you next time.